Thank you for purchasing an FRPA educational recording. Please refer to the materials that were included in the confirmation email that you received after you purchased this recording. Those materials include the presentation, which you will want to follow along with, and any information regarding CEU credit.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me. As Bree said, my name is Kirsten Barnes. I am a trainer and consultant. I get to travel all around the country and speak at conferences and do customized training for Parks and Recreation and other municipal organizations. But before that, I did almost 20 years in the field in hospitality, recreation, and parks, and private health and wellness. So I've sat in the same seats that many of you are in before. And so what I wanted to talk about was culture. And I've had a great opportunity to be in a corporate culture where that was first and in front of our mind every single day when we came into work. We were thinking about the culture that we were creating for our team and for the guests in our facilities and for our members. And so when I went from private recreation back into public recreation, I really wanted to take that with me and apply those rules. But the fact of the matter is we're a little bit different than the private sector, the things that we do. So we'll talk a little bit about how we can bridge that gap and what that really looks like. And hopefully you're going to walk away from here with some practical things that you can apply. So before we get started, you guys tell me just a little bit about yourselves, just so I kind of know who I'm talking to. First of all, I know you guys get the opportunity to sign up for classes ahead of time. So how many of you are coming back this afternoon to talk about the experience economy with me? Okay. All right. Okay, good. Well, then I can tell lots of stories now and then tell them again later. That's awesome. How many of you guys are fairly new to Parks and Recreation? Like, you've been in the field 5 years or less? Okay, how many are in that? Wow. Okay, how many are in that 5 to 10 year range? Quite a few, 10 to 20 years? Where's my 20 plus folks? Wow. Okay, awesome. Okay, here's my next question for you. How many of you are here because you have an awesome culture and you're like, I need to start the morning with a pat on the back? Nobody? How many of you are here because you think, well, we could maybe use a little bit of a culture shift? Okay, all right. If your boss is here, just like give me the wink. It's okay. It's fine. All right, so this is what we're gonna do today. We got lots of resources. I promise that I will try to keep my Disney references to a minimum because I have a feeling you all probably get that down your throat all the time. But a couple of books from Disney, if you guys are readers, these are great places to start talking about culture. The New Gold Standard is about the Ritz-Carlton, the Starbucks Experience, and corporate culture are all great books if you wanna read and kind of soak some things up. So you'll find lots of examples from these books as we go through today. So I guess the best place to start is to talk about what is culture. So Ravisi and Schultz in 2006 said culture is a set of shared mental assumptions that guide interpretation and action in organizations by defining appropriate behavior for various situations. It's groupthink. Right? It's as a group, what do we do? So what that means for us as professionals in the field is our culture is a variety of different things. The first thing is, it's what's our value? What's our vision? What's our mission? How many of you guys can tell me what your organization's mission is right now? Okay, we're gonna talk a little bit about that. It's also your working systems. It's the way that you normally do things, right? It's all the common language and symbols that you use. I don't know if y'all have ever thought about it, but in Parks and Recreation, I feel like we're kind of the kings of acronyms. When you go out and talk to people, sometimes they're like, I don't have any idea what FRPA, CPRA, CPRE, I don't know what any of that stuff is, right? But it's also the common things that we say, and it's the things that we believe. So how many of you guys think what we do is important? Okay, that's good. All right, almost everybody raised their hand. I'm pretty impressed. Okay, why? What do you do that makes your community better? Oh, this is a harder question.
Give them a chance to get out and socialize.
We get them out to socialize, right? What else?
Give them a healthy lifestyle.
Healthy lifestyle. Quality of life, a sense of place, preserve green space,
building dreams for the future.
Aw, build it. That's my warm. I knew there was a warm and fuzzy person in here somewhere, right? So here's the thing, you guys. Ain't nobody moving to your community because you got good roads. I'm sorry. Okay, maybe in Florida. Those old people need a spot, right? Okay. People are not coming to your community though because you have great roads. They're coming to your communities because they're safe and because they want places where they can connect, where they can build those dreams, where they can socialize, where they can have a healthy lifestyle. And that's what Parks and Recreation does. So it's important to us that we start by reminding the folks that we work with that what we do is incredibly important, and they are incredibly important. They're a piece of that, because the bottom line about culture is that it's your personality. Your culture is the personality of your organization. Okay, so I love to play music before sessions, and I always pick 80s music because I feel like it doesn't matter how old you are, like we all get 80s music. Okay, when Journey comes on, we're all just a small town girl living in a big time world. I mean, we just are. So we find that thing that connects us, right? But it's kind of about that idea that we want to create that energy around what we're doing. Here's the really hard piece of culture, though. Culture's like this giant iceberg, okay? And on the top of the culture is how we say we do things, right? It's our policies and procedures. It's our mission and vision and values. It's all the things that we say we believe in. But culture's a little bit like an iceberg in that it can sink you, right? If you're not paying attention to all of these things down here, the way we actually do things, your culture can get away from you. So what is your common language? How many of you have like code words that you use? Okay, you're laughing because we all know, right? So anybody in aquatics? You all are gonna get this, right? We used to call our water fitness ladies the Shark Tank, because they could eat you up and spit you out. Okay, so common language. What about, what are your typical behaviors? How does your team behave on a daily basis? Not how are they supposed to behave, not what do they do when you're there, but what do they do on a daily basis? It's your traditions and stories. How many of you guys have these little legends about your community or about your department or stories that you tell about what conference was like before HR got involved? Yeah, that's part of your culture, right? How do people feel about work? Are they excited to come in? Do they drag in because they don't want to be there? It is stinking hot here. I am sure the summer has been long. Those of you who have people working outside, are they coming in with the same energy and excitement that they had the first week of the summer? Okay, I will tell you what, how many of you guys ever see somebody walk into your facilities and the person at the front desk says, hey, how are you today? And they say, you know what, I am great. It is Friday. I have the weekend off. I'm ready. And what's your front desk say in response to them? I hear this all the time. Oh yeah, we work in recreation. We don't get weekends off. You guys know what I just heard as a consumer? I have to be here on the weekends. And if you have to be here because you work here, why would I want to come here? Right? So how do we feel about work? What are our communication styles? I walked into a community center once where there was a glass wall between the front desk and the offices, and instead of walking around, they would just yell at each other. Hey, what are we doing later? Okay, no, right? How do you communicate? And what are your attitudes and perceptions about what you're doing, about the community that you serve, about the goals that you have, about your expectations? So the way we say we do things is that tiny bit at the top, but all of these other things are a part of your culture. You want to know what lives down here? That won't work here. Oh, we can't do that. That won't work here. We have always done it this way. We can't change. Right? You guys know exactly what I'm talking about. So you can say we have great culture, we're doing great things, but that kind of piece below makes a big difference. So when you're thinking about cultural personality, so this is like the interactive part of the thing where I say stuff and then you say stuff and then I, right? Okay, just making sure. So when you guys see the Apple logo, what do you guys think of? Innovation.
Originality.
Expensive, right? Okay. Risk, right? They are risk takers. Strong market, right? They have an enormous percentage of the market. It's ridiculous. What else? Anybody?
Quality.
I love that all of our devices can talk to each other and we can share stuff, right? What about Dell? What do you think of when you look at Dell? College, right? Business. How many of you have a Dell in your office? How many of your Dells were built in 1842? Okay, just checking. How many of you in your head just went, dude, you're getting a Dell? Gen Xers, you're out there. I know you remember these commercials for college, right? Okay, what about when we see the Ritz-Carlton logo? I know you all got into this because of the money, and this is your favorite place to stay. That always gets a big laugh. I don't know why. So what do you think of when you see the Ritz-Carlton logo?
Five-star.
Money, money, money. Luxury.
Quality.
Ritzy. Great customer service. Okay. What about the Holiday Inn?
Quality,
right? I mean, the weekend, weekend getaway. What else?
Breakfast.
Y'all, at Holiday Inn, you get a free breakfast, and their waffle makers have their logos in them. Have you seen this? You get the little H logo on your waffle. I mean, it's worth it. Okay? You pretty much know your Holiday Inn will be the same wherever you go in the country, right? Clean, basic amenities, decent location, right? Pretty consistent. What about Under Armour? What do you guys think of when you see Under Armour?
Performance.
Hot athletes, okay.
Popular.
Expensive.
Pretty new,
right? Pretty young, you know, innovative too. Under Armour was the first one to bring dry fit tech to the market. So they really brought that out. What about Russell Athletic? Do you guys know Russell Athletic? Rec people usually do.
High school,
cheerleading, baseball. They sell it at Walmart, okay? My dad was a coach. I have vivid memories of him in his Russell Athletic shoes. His shorts, the polyester ones with the big waistband with the snaps on them. The striped socks, they used to, and my mom used to make my dad buy Russell shoes from Walmart because he also ran the pool during the summer, but he wore tennis shoes on deck, so they just got trashed, right? So here's the thing. These companies all provide similar products. But when we think about who we aspire to be, I don't know if anybody in the room aspires to be Russell Athletic. Versus, I want to be like Under Armour. I want to be like Apple. Because these companies have a personality. We think specific things about them. And we want to be like them. And that's who we want to be. And here's the deal, guys. I don't care if you have a brand new $35 million recreation facility. Or if you have a pool that was a WPA project built in 1934, a big old square pool with a crappy bathhouse. Your personality can transcend that. Who you are can be beyond that. So that's about building culture. But why is it important? Why do we even care about culture? Well, the fact of the matter is that we know that when we have great culture, it boosts happiness in our team. Happier teams are more productive. I've got some statistics up there. But more importantly, in companies that have highly aligned cultures and they're innovative, and y'all are here because you want to be innovative and you want to try new things, we know that they have a 30% higher enterprise value, and here's the big one, 17% higher profit growth than companies that are not aligned, that don't have good culture, that don't think outside the box. How many of y'all could use an extra 17% on your bottom line? Right? Anybody in the room running off an enterprise fund where you have to break even or contribute to your general fund in your department? 17%'s a lot. Okay? So culture is important, not because it makes us feel good, not because it positively impacts our community, because those things are both really important, but it also drives our bottom line. And that gives us more opportunities to do great things in our community and impact our community in awesome ways. All right. So we also know it influences our financial performance. That's what we just talked about. Culture can be that little glue that holds your organization together. When there are questions about how to act or how to respond to something or which direction we should go, culture can be that thing that drives you. It influences individuals in your organization to make choices that align with your mission and values, but it can also become a liability. If you're not controlling your culture, it can become a liability. Okay, so I'm watching 13 Reasons Why. Anybody watched this with their kids? So I'm on the third season right now, and for those of you who haven't seen it, it's based on a great book. But in the third season, the survivors of some bad things in the school are trying to change the culture of the school. So they have a really poor, kind of toxic culture in the school. But the whole premise behind it is that the administration has allowed this to happen because the football players are great, they bring a lot of money into the school, and so they've allowed this thing to happen by not managing it. And now it's a liability for them financially and their standing in the community. So that's just a great example of, in theater, kind of reflecting what happens in our life. So culture can be a liability if we don't control it. So if you go out on Google or Pinterest or you buy books, you can find all these great lists about where to start with culture, develop a vision and a strategy and create goals and blah, blah, blah. And y'all are thinking, how do I apply that, right? That's awesome, but it's very vague and out there. So I want to get real about what culture is and about how we can impact that. And it starts with the little things that we do. Malcolm Gladwell wrote a book called The Tipping Point. If any of you have ever read it, it's a fantastic book. If you haven't read it, it's a quick read. But in it, he talks about when Rudy Giuliani was elected mayor of New York City. And during that specific time in New York City, crime was at an all-time high. The culture in the city was really bad. And, you know, tourism is a big part of the tax dollars in New York City, and people simply were not coming because they were afraid. So he went to the chief of police and he said, listen, I want to try this thing out where we police the little things. So I want your people, you know, the probably the best trained police force in the world, I want them to go out and I want them to issue tickets for jaywalking. And I want them to issue tickets for public drunkenness and citations for, sleeping in the park and littering. The police chief said, all right, I mean, everything else we're trying is not working. So they did, and they went out and they wrote these tickets, and New Yorkers started to see this, and they said, you know, you're going to get a ticket for littering. Throw your trash in the bin. And they put their friends in taxis and sent them home instead of leaving them sleeping on the streets, and they followed the traffic lights instead of jaywalking. And it seemed odd, but what happened was as they policed those little things and people in New York City caught on that this is what needed to happen, the rates of violent crimes, grand theft, larceny, murder, all started to go down. All because they started policing the little things. So what are the little things to us in recreation? The little things to us are closing locker doors every time you go through the locker room. Any of y'all ever noticed, how many of you guys have locker rooms? Right? Or kitchens at home, right? If you open every locker door and take a picture of it and then close every locker door and show your staff, they're gonna say, oh, that one's cleaner, the one with the closed doors, only because the doors are closed. What about picking up trash? Can y'all imagine what would happen if every single time every person got out of their car, if they saw a piece of trash on the ground from the time they got out of their car all through their shift and went back to their car, if they picked it up and threw it away, how clean your facility would look? Just by doing that one little thing. So one of the things we know about winning organizations is that they start with some really little things. They start by defining their culture. They know what their path is, and they're not afraid to change it. They never hire people. They always select the right people. They know that team member behavior is where culture really lives. They strive to kind of create these wow experiences, and they really listen to guest feedback. So let's drill down on this just a little bit. There are some basic keys to culture. The first thing we know is that you have to define your customer orientation. So what I mean by that is how we view our customers affects how we treat them. right? So we called our ladies the shark tank. That meant that some of the time we went out there ready to punch them in the face if they got crazy. But that probably was not the best approach. How many of you guys have things that you, code words or nicknames that you have for your customers? Yeah, do you want to share? Okay, good. Good plan. It's the seniors. Okay, say no more. We all got it right here. We gotcha. Right? So think about how you define your customer orientation. Are you thankful when they come in? Are you scared of them? Do they exhaust you? Those of you who deal with middle schoolers, I get it. Okay. What about your people orientation? What do you guys think of the people that work for you? Do you view your people as assets or are they expenses? Anybody watch Dance Moms? Everybody's replaceable, Abby Lee says. Everybody on the team is replaceable. How many of you guys treat your employees like that? How many of you don't, but maybe your organizations do? Everybody's replaceable, right? Okay, I will tell you that the one thing that will overcome the fact that we don't pay really great in public recreation is if you have a good culture. Okay, what are your performance standards? How do we hold people accountable, right? And for what are they accountable? So a big part of what drives our culture is how do we hold people accountable for the things that we think are important, right? How many of you have great employees that are sometimes 3 or 4 or 5 minutes late? Yeah? Me, I'm 3 or 4 or 5 minutes late. I struggle with this. But the fact of the matter is that when we let our great employees be 3 or 4 or 5 minutes late, our not so great employees go, well, if Andrew can get away with that, then I'm not going to come in on time. Okay? So we allow them to push that line back, and that affects our culture. How many of you, I saw this a lot in private recreation. I had people who were fantastic. Oh my gosh, so good at their job. I had one woman who would bring in 100 plus people to a Zumba class 3 times a week in the middle of the morning. 100 plus people. She was very demanding. She was a bit of a diva. And so we bought her a stage and we bought her a sound system and we moved her to our double gym and let her grow her classes and gave her prime real estate on the schedule. We said, the only thing we need you to do is you got to bring hand towels down for people to, like, you know, wipe their sweat off with. And we need you to be there a few minutes early to help get the sound system set up. And she told us, no. Nope, I can do it. I can do it. You guys can set it up for me. I have all these people. So her manager talked to her 3 times, came to me and said, KB, I need your help. Kim's just not doing it. I've talked to her. I've asked her. She says, okay, and then she doesn't do it, and I don't know what to do. So I called her in, and I said, Kim, we really, really love what you're doing, but I need you to know that your actions are telling me that you're no longer interested in working here. And she said, what do you mean? And I said, well, you know, we're asking you to do these basic things. And you're not doing them. So that's telling me that you don't want to, no, I still want to work here. Awesome. Then going forward, I need to make sure that you do this. And she looked at me and she said, you know what? At 100 plus women out there, half of them are going to quit if you get rid of me. I think I won't be doing that. And I said, okay. Well, then let's reconvene after your class on Friday. So she had a full gym after her class. I brought her in and I said, Kim, we talked about this. You didn't come early and do the things that we asked of you. So thank you very much for everything, but we'll be covering your classes. And we'll go ahead and you know, it's okay that you don't want to work here anymore. And then I asked a really awkward question. By the way, did you want me to cancel your membership or would you like to start paying for it? And she said, you will rue the day. She did not say that, but I kind of wish she would have because that would have been super dramatic. She said, you'll call me next week. And there's going to be a line of women out your door when I walk out of this office. And she really did give me that hand signal. And she walked out, hair flip. There was a line of women outside my door to quit. This was a big deal because we got bonused on retention. Do you want to know how many women were outside my door? 3. 3. That was a good guess. I heard that. 3. 3 women quit. And it was okay. It was all right. Because the following week, 6 of my 22 other fitness instructors came to my office and said, thank you so much, because it was getting really frustrating that you expected us to do something and weren't holding everybody that same standard. So what are you holding people accountable for? And are you driving your culture through that, okay? Do you have commitment to change and innovation? You are here because you want to do cool things in your departments. So I already know the answer to that. And do you have a company process orientation or an organizational process orientation? When you bring new people in, how do you get them online with what you're doing? When you make changes, how do you get people on board with that? What is your process to making sure that you're being consistent across your organization? Okay, so let's talk a little bit about define and refine. Sorry, I promise, I think this is the only reference in this presentation. Roy Disney said, it's not hard to make decision when you know what your values are. Right? When we know what our values are, we always know what the right answer is. Your mission and vision is important. It's your roadmap. It tells you all the answers to the test. I used to sit in my car before I went in. I worked for a company called Lifetime Fitness. And Sarah at the front desk stopped me on the way in one day and she said, KB, why are you sitting in your car for 5 minutes before you come in every day? Are you watching cat videos? Like, what is happening? And I said, Sarah, if I tell you, you can't tell anybody because they're going to think I'm a dork. Sarah was going to tell everybody. I knew she was going to tell everybody. She was that girl, right? And she said, okay, I won't tell boss what's up. And I said, I actually sit out there and recite our mission every day before I come into work. I go, our mission is to provide an educational, entertaining, friendly, and inviting, functional, and innovative experience of uncompromising quality that meets the health and fitness needs of the entire family. That is a mouthful, but I'll tell you, I said it every day, and every time a decision came up or we had to do something, I thought, is this educational or entertaining? If I had to talk to a customer, I thought, was this friendly and inviting? If I needed to make a change to something that we're doing, I said, is this uncompromising quality? I never could make a wrong decision because I knew exactly what our mission and vision was. I won't repeat the vision to you because it's even longer about being a good employer and everything. But I'll tell you that here I am 7 years removed from that company and I still think about that. I can still tell you what that is because it was ingrained in what we do. Yes. Yes.
That your mission or your vision should be 7 to 10 words. No
way. Yes, I have. And actually,
can you address that?
Yes. So it's tough in public government, right? Because a lot of you, how many of you guys have a department mission or vision that was probably written 20 years ago or whatever? And my guess is it's probably something along the lines of, we are committed to providing green space for all the people, inclusion, technology, fun, whatever. It probably doesn't mean anything. So this idea that mission and vision should be down to 7 to 10 words is so that people can remember it and it's meaningful, right? So our 6 that we focused on, educational, entertaining, friendly, inviting, functional, and innovative, that was the core of what we were doing. So my suggestion to you is you can't change this. This is probably approved by your board, city government, whatever it is. What you can do is you can go in and you can pull those tangible pieces out. So what part of your mission statement can you grab onto? We're going to provide green spaces. A lot of you probably have something like that in your mission and vision. What does a green space look like in your community, and how does your team impact that? We're going to provide quality recreational experiences. That's very vague. But for you in your community or in your role, what does a quality recreational experience mean? Does it mean providing a safe pool? Does it mean providing inclusive programs for kids? Does it mean providing senior activities? So pull out those tangible pieces so that it means something. One thing we know about these youngest kids, okay, so we're gonna stop bagging on millennials because millennials are like 35 now, y'all, okay? That's all I'm saying. These young kids that are working for us now are in a brand new generation, and we don't know a lot about it, but one of the things we know is that they want to work somewhere where they feel like they have an impact on their communities. And nobody has more of an impact than we do, but we need to show them that. And we can kind of use our mission and vision, those tangible pieces, those 3, 7, 10 words that mean something to help show them that impact. If you want to rewrite your mission and vision, I say do it. If you want to do it for your, just for your department or just for your branch and come up with something, I say do it. There's lots of great resources out there. I can point you in the direction of some people who can help you with that. But I think it's critically important to your culture. And it was right in line with what we were talking about. That was good timing. Please expect your team to know it. Know what your vision is, your mission. If they don't know it, that's okay. Are they living it? I would never ask a 17-year-old standing in the middle of a gym full of kids if they knew what our mission was. But I did ask them, hey, what'd you do today that's educational? Or I would ask a fitness person, tell me how you showed somebody that you were inviting them onto the fitness floor. Fitness floors are scary places, you guys. If you are not a big, beefed up guy, fitness floors can be scary. So what are you doing to be inviting to people? So I expected them to live that out every day. At the Ritz-Carlton, they have something called the Credo. I love the Ritz-Carlton Credo because it tells folks what they need to do. It says, the Ritz-Carlton Hotel is a place where genuine care and comfort of our guests is our highest mission. Right? Okay, we can kind of get that. Then it says, we pledge to provide the finest personal services and facilities for our guests who will always enjoy a warm, relaxed, yet refined ambiance. Okay, that paints a picture, right? That's a story about what we want people to experience. The Ritz-Carlton experience enlivens the senses, instills well-being, and fulfills even the unexpressed wishes and needs of our guests. Anybody getting their phone to look up Ritz-Carlton's right now? Like, I would like to go there. So I had a chance to attend a back-of-house meeting. So every morning at the Ritz-Carlton, they get together, and the head housekeeping and the head concierge and the head of the front desk talk about the day, and they say, what's going to happen? And so the person who's in charge of guest services has her clipboard, right? And we're standing back there watching this all happen. She's, like, flipping through. Oh, now, they keep a dossier on all of their guests, essentially. If you've stayed at the Ritz-Carlton anywhere, every Ritz-Carlton knows what your preferences are. So I see that Mr. Smith is checking in today. When he was in Tucson last week, he had salsa music playing on his radio. Could you please make sure that the radio is at a reasonable volume on salsa music when he checks in? And oh, Mr. Adams requested down alternative pillows because he's allergic. Yes. And when we do our Sundays, they had a Sunday cart that it was Sunday, right? So they'd take their little Sunday cart around to all the rooms and make you your own little ice cream sundae right there in the hallway. When you get to floor 7, please make sure there's frozen yogurt because the Miller's daughter is lactose intolerant. And I was like my mind exploded just a little bit, you guys. This is how much they were committed to fulfilling the unexpressed wishes of their guests. Can you imagine if every time you had somebody come in and register for a program or be a part of something that you did, you went into their little ActiveNet account or whatever you use, and you were like, let me write some notes about this. Johnny scored at the ball game on this day, and the crowd went wild. And so when Johnny goes to register for swimming lessons, you're like, oh my gosh. Johnny, I heard about the baseball game last summer where you hit that game-winning home run, and Johnny's mom is like, oh my gosh, this is the best place ever, and Johnny's like, you guys, everybody in the whole parks department knows that I hit a home run, and Johnny's friends are like, I want to sign up if they're going to know all the cool stuff that I do, and then you make $1 million and you all retire. But it's this idea that they want to know, they want to create that kind of connective experience. So they have a very defined path. They've simplified this down. They actually wear this. They have little cards that they can wear in their lanyards or their name tags that have this on it so they can refer to it any day. But make those things easy to remember for your people. Make it easy to live. This is on the other side. So the Credo, we are ladies and gentlemen, serving ladies and gentlemen, which I just love. It kind of changes the mindset. It's got their 3 steps of service, and it's got their employee promise. So they have that at their fingertips all the time. And in the book about the Ritz-Carlton that I referenced earlier, they tell the story about a young woman who came in to interview for a management position. And the Ritz-Carlton is kind of like working at the best in the hospitality industry. So she very, very kind of shyly said to the person who was interviewing, she said, I have to ask you a question. She said, you know, we kind of talk about how they drink the Kool-Aid at the Ritz-Carlton. Like, all of your people know your Credo and your steps to service. And And we see that, and it's kind of like a cult. And the interviewer said, you know, we don't require people to do that. But the fact of the matter is that we all do it because we know it's what our guests expect of us, and we want to provide the best experience possible. So nobody makes anybody wear those. Nobody makes anybody recite that every day. But we do it because we live out those experiences daily with our guests. That's where we want to get to. We want our team to know so clearly what the expectations are that we're able to move to. They're able to make decisions. At Disney, I'm just kidding. At Disney, they make their decisions in four steps, right? So anytime they make a decision at Disney, they think about safety. They think about, is it a courtesy to our cast members and our guests? Is it part of the show that we're putting on, right? And then, is it within our capacity or efficiency? So when they added that brand new Star Wars attraction this year, they took all these things into consideration, okay? But the fact of the matter is you can never make a wrong decision because you always know what the expectation is because their culture is defined. You have to refine that culture. You have to stay relevant to your community. You have to add Star Wars, okay? That's what it is. You have to change your theme. You have to think about the people in your community. And you have to allow your business to change as your community changes. So think about Buick. Have you guys seen the new Buick commercials? And they're like, oh yeah, my favorite one is one of the first ones that they did where the guy's like, oh yeah, I'm in the Buick, and he goes and gets in his friend's car, and it's like this old beater Buick, and the guy's eating a burrito, and it was the wrong Buick. The new Buick's all sleek and nice. Well, Buick knew that all their people who were their customers were dying. Right? So they needed to change what they were doing. Dying people don't buy cars. So they said, we got to appeal to this kind of younger generation. So they allowed their business to change. At the Ritz-Carlton, this is what a typical Ritz-Carlton looked like because it was for a typical Ritz-Carlton traveler, a single businessman traveling during the week for business. So they had hardwood floors and dark walnut and heavy panels and smoking rooms. That's not who the Ritz-Carlton traveler is now. They're having more families. They're having more women. They're even building into the built environment. This is actually a room, a treehouse room, right? So they're building into this idea of our consumer is changing. How is your facility changing? How many of you have made minor facelifts to your facility? Changed signage? Updated uniforms, right? Any of you still wearing like the weird 80s teal color with some random logo on it that doesn't apply to Parks and Rec? Some of you are, yeah, I know. That's okay. So we've defined our path, we've refined it as we've gone along. Now I want you to select people. I want you to pick the right people. So last year I did a whole session on select, don't hire. And one of the things that came up was the selection committee said, we're really worried that people are gonna go back and tell their HR departments that they're selecting and not hiring. And that makes our HR departments nervous because they want to know every question was the same and everything, you know, that we were consistent and we were objective. But I'm going to push back on that just a little bit. When we hire somebody, we find somebody who has the right skills. We find somebody who can sharpen a lawnmower blade or teach a rock climbing class or swim the length of the pool or whatever it might be. But when we hire somebody, we find the right attitude. I can teach you how to sharpen, I can't teach you how to sharpen a mower blade, but somebody can teach you how to sharpen a mower blade. I can't teach you to have a great attitude. I can't teach you to come to work passionate. I can't teach you to be customer focused. Okay? So when we hire, we put a butt in a seat. When we select, we find the right person for the right seat on the right bus. All right? This starts before you start the interview process. So you need to think about your skills that are required. What do I have to know before I come to the job versus what I can teach you? So I'm helping an agency in Texas rewrite their interview guides, and I'm looking at their camp supervisor guide, and one of the questions is, on a field trip, what would you pack in your emergency kit? This is actually a really good question, right? This is a good thing for a camp director to know. But here's the alternative to that. Can I teach you what my camp standard is to put in my emergency pack? Right? I can. That's something I can teach you. I'm going to test you on it and make sure you understand it. Maybe a better question would be, You know, tell me about a time when you had a parent who was angry. How did you handle that? Because I can't teach you how to take a beating from somebody. I was in, Texas. I mean, honestly, I was in Texas earlier this year, and I was watching an interaction between the camp director and a parent. Hand to God, y'all, this woman flipped the table over. The checkout flipped it over. In Texas, because her kids had to go outside. Can't make it up. Can't make it up. And the camp director, as all of this was going down, I could see him like patting the arm of the person at the table. And I couldn't tell what he was saying, but the person at the checkout table got up and very slowly walked away and took all the kids with them and got them somewhere else. And the camp director, I can't teach you to keep your calm like that. I can give you some tools, but ask those questions. So before you start, what are your required skills and what are things that you can actually teach? So you guys, tell me about your lowest performing team member. Who on your team right now, don't give me any names, if they're sitting here, just like touch your nose, okay? Tell me about your lowest performing team member. Person on your team nobody wants to work with. You know you're gonna have a problem when you come in tomorrow. We all have them, it's okay.
Going back to code, the dinosaur that won't check email, won't use new technology. It's a big chore, she's gonna tell everyone about how bad it is.
Oh my gosh, so not only is she not gonna do it, but she's gonna make sure everybody else knows. Oh yeah, what was that? Debbie Downer, yes.
They don't want to be there.
No, it's obvious that they're not invested or engaged with what's going on.
Part is, of the day is
leave. Yes, everybody's like, oh, Johnny gets off at 9, let's go, okay? Anybody else?
Lazy.
Ah, yes, so this is their second job and it's obviously their 47th priority. Right, yes, the entitled. Anybody else?
We've never historically done that, therefore we don't need to do it.
No, absolutely not. There's absolutely no reason to try to do anything new. What are you thinking? What about your best person? Like, if I had 10 of these people, I could work from home and never come in again. Tell me about that person.
Before I've even thought about it, she's going to be here.
Right? You're like, whoa, good job. I didn't even have to worry about that. What else?
Positive.
Positive. They come in with a great attitude. Yes. Anybody else?
Willing.
Both of you. Willing. They're going to pick up shifts. They're compassionate. They're empathetic. You can count on them. They show up on time. They're silly when they're there. They're not afraid to laugh at themselves. They make customers feel welcome. I could go on and on and on. Why is it so much easier to say the bad stuff? Right? But here's the thing, you guys. We're not the only people who think this way. See, none of you told me that your best employees could answer 5 phone lines all at the same time. Not a single one of you was like, man, you should see the way this lady teaches a fitness class. Uh-uh, no. None of you, not a single person in this room alluded to any specific job skill. How many of you, when you were thinking about your best people, were thinking about their job skills specifically? Right, because we can teach all that, but we can't teach the character piece of it. And what we know is that everybody across all industries feels this way. So Leadership IQ did this study of 20,000 new hires. And in the first 18 months, 46% of them failed. So either they quit or they were fired. Because of these reasons, this does not equal 100. There's like a smidgen of percentage left that's split up between some other stuff. But 26% left because they weren't coachable. So they couldn't take feedback and apply it in an appropriate way. 23% didn't have the emotional intelligence, right? They laughed when they should not have, okay? 17% were unmotivated. There's a lot of reasons people are unmotivated. At least half the time it's our fault. So we can have a conversation about that sometime. 15% lacked the right temperament. How many of you have a 5 a.m. opener that clearly does not like people that much? Right? But we let them stay because we don't want to work at 5 a.m., okay? 11% couldn't do the job. You guys, that's huge. How much does it cost you to hire somebody in your organization, a full-time person in your organization? Do you know? A fortune, seriously. So I do know when I worked for Lifetime Fitness, from the time we posted an ad until you got through onboarding, a full-time person cost us $9,000. $9,000. I had about 100 full-time people that worked for me. If I turned over 46 people of those, or 46 of those people, let's just round it, I'm gonna round down, let's round it to 40, every 18 months, okay? That's an enormous amount of my budget. You're talking almost $100,000 annually in hiring and training alone. How many of you guys have that much in your budget to spend hiring and training people? And frankly, how many of y'all have that much time to deal with it, right? So you have to select the right people from the beginning by knowing what skills you're looking for. You have to find those. People call those soft skills. I hate that word. I think they should be called essential skills because they're essential to us doing our jobs. Because the fact of the matter is that culture lives here, right? Culture lives with the people who work for you. At the Ritz-Carlton, they say they're ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen because they expect their employees to behave and respond to situations at the same level as that their customers would. I don't know if any of y'all have ever been in a high-end resort. Maybe the people who work there probably need to respond better than some of those people, but you get what they're getting at, right? Everything your team does is culture. Every single thing your team does is culture. The way they look, the way they act, the words that they say, the tone of voice that they use, all of it. How many of you think you don't have a culture? You're like, bah, I don't have a culture. So this is called the cultureless culture. Y'all, white bread, still bread. If you think you don't have a culture, you do. You're just not controlling it. And remember the big iceberg? That part that sank the Titanic? That's the part you have to control. It has to start at the top. How many of you in here are administrators in your organization? Awesome, because you guys get to drive this down. You get to decide what the culture is and set the expectation. How many of you, don't raise your hand mentally, how many of you in this room are in the middle of the pack and you're thinking, I want to change the culture, but the people above me do not, okay? You don't have to say it. You can come talk to me later. I'll buy you a drink. It's hard, I know, okay? But you can still push that down. Right? I can have a great culture in my division even if I can't control the agency culture. It just means that I have to take on the burden of being the buffer from the negativity. Okay? And that's hard, you guys. It really is. But I also want you to think about this. Do any of you guys know what RBF is? Okay, so for those of you that don't, RBF, I had a girl who worked for me. She was a collegiate swimmer. They called her the pool Nazi, if that tells you anything about her. When I went to work at Lifetime Fitness, I hired her to come work for me, and she was my child center department head, so she worked with little people. She was like an Amazon. She's like 8 feet tall, beautiful, great figure, a little intimidating, right? And one day, one of her team came to me, and they said, KB, can I ask you a question? I said, sure. And they said, what's wrong with Becky? Her name was Becky. They said, what is wrong with Becky? And I said, what do you mean? I need to give you an example. I said, perfect. I like examples, especially when people act it out. It makes me feel good. So they said, do you know what Becky looks like when she's upset with us? I have a pretty good idea, but can you show me? We had those knee walls, those half walls in our child center, and she would lean on them, right? Because she was 8 feet tall, right? So she would lean on, and so they demonstrated. She looks like this. I was like, that's actually a pretty accurate impersonation. They said, awesome. Do you know what she looks like when she's really happy about something that we did? I said, what does she look like? And I was really excited to see what happened. And they did this. And I said, oh, Becky has RBF, resting Becky face. Right? Here's the deal. What does your face look like when nobody knows that they're when you don't realize anybody's looking at you? What does your face look like? So I started thinking about this. My mom was one of the most talented, sweetest, kindest, smartest people I've ever met in my life. But she always had a scowl on her face. Like, as she got older, she just looked like this permanently, which was super sad because she was awesome. So I started thinking, what does my face look like? And my office was on the pool deck and had windows all the way around it, so people could see me all the time. I actually built a closet in my office so I could hide. Okay? So here's what I want you guys to do. When you leave this week and you go back to wherever you're from, I want you to get in your car, and every time you stop at a stoplight, I want you to think, what does my face look like? Right now, because you're basically in a giant terrarium with people looking inside. Y'all know you're checking out the people beside you. What does my face look like right now? And what I realized was my face was starting to look a little bit like my mom's. So I'm like, okay, I got to change this. So I started smiling at the stoplight. And then I was like, okay, now you look like a crazy person. Tone it down just a little bit. So I toned it down just a little bit, and I will tell you that every now and then, I've been doing this since 2004, you guys, and every now and then, I will catch myself, and I'm like, gosh, my face looks super nasty right now. I'm a terrible poker player because I'm always smiling like an idiot, or I'm in deep concentration, right? But I want you to sit in your car to stop it, and I want you to think, what do people see when they're looking in my window right now? Am I approachable? Do I look friendly? When we were at Disney in January with my daughter, it was my daughter and my husband and I and her 15-year-old friend, and I think about 46 people said, excuse me, ma'am, would you take our picture? And finally, Haley said, what is happening? Why does everybody keep stopping you? And I said, it's my Midwestern face. It's my resting face. I look approachable because that's what we do. So I want you guys to think about that. Or as you're sitting in class today, think, if the speaker's looking at me right now, what does my face look like? Okay? Because this is part of your culture. What do people see when you don't think they're looking at you? Okay? Then you have to deliver a wow experience. It starts with the smell. If your community center smells like your pool, something is wrong. Okay? If your gymnastics gym smells like sweaty girls, something is wrong. If anybody, I know it's Florida, but y'all have ice arenas here somewhere, I know. Anybody have an ice arena? Hockey players are the most disgusting human beings on the face of the planet. Okay? They have a distinct smell. In fact, my hockey teams, I knew who was practicing by what the lobby smelled like. Okay? That is not a wow. It's like, wow. That's not the kind of wow you want. Okay? What do you hear when you walk into camp? Are all of the kids playing dead fish? I don't know if you guys know what dead fish is. Or sleeping lions, that seems to be more politically correct. Where you have all the kids, you're like, oh, the first one to wake up is out. So all the kids pretend to be sleeping. It's the best way to end the day. Not a great experience. Or gets the music thumping. Right? My best thing is if parents are dropping kids off at camp, and they're like, oh my gosh, you guys are having so much fun. Can I stay and you can go to my work? That is a win. That's awesome culture, you guys. That's getting it. That's the wow experience. What's it taste like? Any of you with concession stands eat a hot dog at the end of the day. If they're brown and the buns are hard from the warmer, it's bad. Okay, how many of you won't drink out of your water fountains because your water tastes like sulfur? Okay, so think about that. That's part of the experience. What do you see? Those of you who have, this picture does not show, any of you guys have those PVC racks that you have the big like exercise balls on in your fitness centers? Right, I want you to do something for me. When you go back to your fitness center, I want you to get out a yoga mat and I want you to lay down on the floor and I want you to look two places, up at the air return vents and underneath that rack because there's possibly a flurry of bunnies living under there, okay? Bunnies made of dust. So where are you asking people to look and see? I hate gutters on pools. I think they're most disgusting places ever. They're filled with hair and Band-Aids, and we want people to swim right up to them and put their faces on them, okay? So what do people see? And what do they feel, right? So a lot of us don't give out towels, but how many of you have those awesome light gray Mighty Light tables? The only problem with those tables is if you spill something clear on them, it's hard to tell until you put your arm in it and then lift your arm out and go, you guys know what I'm talking about, right? But here's the thing. You can have all these things awesome and your staff can look like this when people walk in and it's not good. Or you can go in Estes Park, Colorado, they do a 5K. I don't know if any of you have ever tried to run in the mountains. It's torture. I mean, running's torture anyway, but this is super torture. But they do a 5K, and every division in the Parks Department owns a stop along the route. And the campground people decided that running was stupid and they wanted to make it really fun. So they started a party at their stuff and they got all the people who lived around to come out and they had a giant party. They had music going and they had lights out. It was daytime, nobody could see the lights. They said that was a big fail, but the idea was there. So they had music going and they had stuff and they had fun stuff to give the racers. They got like swag when they went by. It was about the experience. It was about the energy. It was about being excited about what was going on. How many of you have ever seen people run the color run just for the t-shirts and to get splattered? It's about the experience. You can screw all the other stuff up if you create a great experience. And on the flip side, if there's no experience to go with a pristine facility, it sucks and nobody remembers it. So culture is about delivering that wow experience through creating great energy around what you're doing. We're going to talk more about experience later. The expectation effect, if people love what you're doing and you fail miserably, because we all do sometimes, they're more likely to forgive you. Versus if they've heard from all their friends that they had a bad experience and you don't fire on all cylinders the entire time they're there, they're going to go, yeah, everybody else was right. So we create this effect. You have to pleasantly surprise your guests. Know that Johnny hit a home run, right? Message somebody. I just sent an email to somebody that I do business with. They have a bond issue on the ballot today, which is odd in August, but whatever. And I just sent them an email and said, hey, I just want to make sure that you guys know I'm thinking of you and I can't wait to see what happens with your bond issue, right? So surprise your guests. Do fun things for them. Anticipate guest needs. If I'm on the phone with you and I know you're coming for the first time for a program, I'm going to give you all the insider information. Right? Okay, so listen, Wendy, when you show up, the parking lot's gonna be crazy busy. I know you're gonna have your kids with you. I want you to come into the parking lot and go to the left, park all the way on the end. Watch out for the geese. Do you guys have geese down here that attack people? Yeah, watch out for the geese, okay? And then when you come in, look for the big A-frame sign with the balloons on it. Carmen's gonna be there. She is gonna get you guys checked into your class. Now Wendy's like, I know exactly where I'm going. I know what to expect. I know who I'm looking for. I already have a connection because I could call somebody by name. So anticipate those needs. If I'm coming into your facility to work out and I have my bag with me, there's a high probability I might need a locker. Hey, I want to make sure, did you need to borrow a lock for your locker? Or did you remember your membership card so that you could do whatever you have to have? So anticipate those needs. That's part of culture. Make sure that you have your service standards that encourage people's behavior to show and not a script. How many of you guys like Chick-fil-A? Love Chick-fil-A. Steal people from Chick-fil-A all the time. I'm like, here's my card, you should work for me, right? But what I don't like about Chick-fil-A is what happens when I say thank you. They say my pleasure every time. Y'all, they've been standing out in Kansas, the one by our house. The line wraps around the building. This girl's got like a backpack with a fan on it and an umbrella, and she's like melting. I can see it. She gets smaller every time I go by. And right? It's not her pleasure. No, it is not her pleasure to stand out there and serve me. I know it. She knows it. But it's what they're supposed to say. So develop standards that encourage behaviors that don't make a script that people have to follow, okay? Pleasantly surprise your team. If you're gonna surprise your guests, pleasantly surprise your team. Buy them pizza, bring in bagels. Tomorrow I've got a session about 50 ways to show your team you love them. Cheap, easy stuff, but do stuff for them that makes them feel good. If you have a GroupMe, any of you use GroupMe or something like that to communicate with your teams, I will tell you anytime people do this, I'm like, after you bring in goodies or donuts or whatever, send me your, at the end of the day, just send me your GroupMe string. And inevitably, everybody's like, oh my gosh, did you know they brought donuts? Did you know that they dropped off Tootsie Rolls, whatever it is, right? Because your team thinks that's cool. They like to be appreciated. Get feedback from your guests. Get that informal feedback. So walk around and talk to people. Don't get stuck in your office. Block off a half hour, an hour, whatever of your day to get out there in the field. If you're at the admin office, away from everybody, leave. Go to the park, go to the pool, pretend you're working and go talk to people. This management by walking around thing, that's a real deal. There's no better way to find out what people are thinking than to go out and walk around, to work the front desk at the community center or to check people in for a baseball tournament or whatever it might be. make sure that you are being a guest. If you can't be a guest at your facility, call your neighboring department and be like, hey, can I trade passes with you so that you can come into my facility and give me some feedback on how my team's doing? How's it feel when you walk in? Does it feel like you want to be there? Are you excited? And then use that formal feedback. So take your surveys and your community meetings and don't just put them in a drawer. Share them with your team. Post them somewhere. Get specific examples and put that out there. Use those program evaluations. Get formal feedback from your team. Do you want to know the best way to know what your team thinks of your culture is? Yeah, ask them, right? Just be like, hey, what do you like best about working here? Have them fill in the blank, right? If I had blank, my job would be perfect. Or if I could do blank, my job would be perfect. Get their feedback. Ask them what they think of your customers. Ask them what they think about how management handles disagreements. Ask them those questions. Get that feedback, okay? So we're going to define and refine our path. We're going to know what we want and how we're going to get there. We're going to take those tangible pieces out of our mission and vision and start to apply them. And we're going to do that through the selection process of finding the right people. Once we've done that, then we're really going to drive that home on a day-to-day basis with our culture, and we're going to see how we're doing. But we have to manage the process. So we're going to, I want you guys to go back and I want you to write down, this is what I think my current culture is right now. This is what we want our culture to be. And here's where the gaps are. So how do we start to fill those in? Do we need to change our selection process? Do we need to change our training? Do we need to make an update to what our goals are? Okay, so find those things and then manage your performance against those things. So when I know what my culture is, I have to manage my performance against that. You cannot hide behind I am a great umpire if you're a jackass to everybody that works with you. You just can't, okay? I clearly do not work in an office every day when I stand up here and say stuff like that in front of you, sorry. Then you have to reset your expectations for your team, right? So you need to communicate what the new expectation is. You need to think about symbols and artifacts that you can use. Come up with code words, make posters, make things that people can put on their lanyards. Anything that you can use that will show them. Come up with acronyms if that's your thing. I just worked with an organization in Illinois, and their whole thing was bring your A game. So all of the behaviors they wanted to build around their culture, they came with, started with a positive attitude, etc. Okay? Use some type of reward system. Rewards and recognitions go a long way. And then make sure that all of your leadership team is aligned with this. If you have that one person who says, I'm not changing, just not gonna do it, then you need to think about whether or not that person's a good fit for your organization. And if you have to, give them the boat speech. Any of you ever been in a boat where everybody has a paddle? Canoed, right? What happens if one person paddles the complete opposite way? You go in a circle, right? You never make any forward progress. So either everybody needs to be rowing together or they need to get out of the boat. And it's okay if you don't want to be on the boat. I respect that. But you have to make a decision and then we have to go from there, okay? And so know what your exit strategy is. If you have people who are underperforming, respectfully talk to them immediately, be very clear about the changes that you want, and then let them know what your next step is. And think about if they're not on the right seat on the bus or if they just need to be off the bus completely, okay? And then my last piece is inspect what you expect. So y'all, take the Kool-Aid, drink it. Shoot up with it, whatever. I apologize if the Kool-Aid reference offends you, but you get what I'm saying, right? Embed your cultural standards into your expectations. What's your quality of the products and the services that you're offering? And then go out there and lead by example. Get on the front lines and lead by example, okay? I kept you guys till the very last minute, a few minutes over. Does anybody have questions, thoughts, comments? Thank you guys for sticking with me. Have a good day.